Good morning. Today is Monday, July the 25th, 217th day of the new year. Joining us this morning, the CEO of, boy, you got a bunch of letters, don't you?
Yes, I do.
CEO of SNSC. Ooh. Okay. Mike Casey's alongside. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Today we're going to spend a little bit of time kind of getting updates of some of the projects around the area that Rob, Mike, and the gang are working with. The most notable one, obviously, is the Balloon Tracks. So we'll get an update on that and a couple of other things. And also step back a little bit and see what's going on trend-wise throughout the rest of the country as we're starting up one convention this evening and ending one convention last week. So a lot of rhetoric getting thrown around. We'll talk a little bit about that also. But before we do, our quote this morning comes from Thomas Fuller. In 1732, quote, "That which proves too much proves nothing." Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, interesting stuff. So, Mike, I'm sure that, you know, when you're in town, people say, so what's going on? With the balloon track? Periodically, we see a lawnmower out there.
Yeah.
Or signs that there was one.
Yes.
But the last time we really heard much of anything was with the trains. And it's not really the balloon part of the property, but it's still part of the property. What, as a status update, what's going on with that thing?
Well, there's not a heck of a lot going on there, although, as I mentioned earlier, I was in town this week, had a meeting with the city to discuss some zoning tweaks to the project because of some current demand in the area for light industrial projects. And so we were basically a kickoff meeting to talk about, you know, next steps to meet with the other folks at the city, other folks at the Coastal Commission, just to sort of dust it off and say, you know, what do we need to do to take advantage of some of the light industrial opportunities that are coming forward?
You get to play with the Coastal Commission. I'll just say it like that and let it fall off the edge of the table. The fact that they are in transition with folks moving on, moving off, is that seen as a challenge by developers, or is that seen as an opportunity kind of to bring folks up to speed and educate the new guys?
Yeah, I think a bit of both, frankly, because, you know, you don't know, you know, what you're going to get for the new guys coming in, and you know what you're losing for the ones leaving. But I think I view it as an opportunity, personally, because you have a fresh opportunity to sit down and discuss your visions and your plans with folks that may bring a new perspective to the table. So,
do you get a chance to kind of retool the presentation yourself also?
Oh, sure. I mean, you got to update it, keep it fresh. There's no question about it. Interesting things occur over time. I mean, one of the things that I learned about today was that Caltrans has an initiative. It's not on the highest radar at this point, but an initiative to do a relocation of a couplet for Highway 101 that would potentially, in fact, will impact the balloon track, which could change the zoning and the actual development there. So I'm going to meet the next time I'm up with the representatives from Caltrans and find that out and dig more into it.
Well, we're going to dig a little bit more into that also when we come back from the break. This could be interesting for a lot of folks, even at the very tertiary level. We'll find out what Mike knows about when we come back. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Casey, CEO of Security National. Mike, you mentioned before the break that Caltrans is looking. Now, couplet is an interesting phrase. depending on how it's applied, it can mean a whole different highway. It can mean just a block, you know, a detour.
Right.
What did Caltrans share with you last week that is talking about an impact at the balloon track?
Yeah, I just need to clarify. I haven't met with Caltrans. It was the city meeting discussing the Caltrans project and recommending that we get together with Caltrans on my next trip up, and I totally agreed. These are words they used, and they showed me a schematic, but it called it a couplet, and it essentially routes one direction of 101, peeling off at the balloon track and traversing through it, heading south, and at some point on the south end, it connects back up to the existing 101.
So like 4th Street just kind of makes a big swoopy.
Yes.
That's a technical term. You can use that as a reference.
A big swoopy.
A
swoopy. I like that.
Yes.
You got it. So that was intriguing. And, of course, if that's got any legs to it, I want to find out what the time frame is, where they are in their process. Caltrans has a very lengthy sequential process, as we know.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get to work with Caltrans much? Or departments of transportation throughout the country? That would probably be a broader perspective.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, I have not, since I've come to work for Security National, we haven't had that many, but in my prior life at Union Pacific Railroad for 25 years, we dealt with transportation agencies all over the country.
Are they interested in new ideas? I mean, the stereotype is one thing, but I can't believe that any entity could exist for any length of time without being castigated, disemboweled. Take your pick.
Yeah.
If the image was really what goes on.
Yeah. I don't know if the image is fair to it. I think they've got some creative guys there, but I just think the structure is such that it doesn't allow for that creativity to come through at all levels. I mean, they just don't color outside the lines there. I mean, that's just what you get.
Well, Richardson's Grove is probably a prime example of that.
Yes, you got it. I mean, they just stick to the script, you know? That's it.
I've been told from folks that do have some experience that Caltrans District 1 is a different critter than the other districts. You can look at 299 and just really easy to see the distinction between the two. Is that the case in a lot of other states also, as you get into various districts or the equivalent of that, that you can see that kind of a swing in the regulators and the representatives and the folks that you're working with to get projects completed?
No, it's interesting that you frame it that way because, you know, I can see that. There are different parts of the country, state, like here in California and other states, where from a regional perspective, they have, as a community, different goals and different priorities, let's say. And I think that when it comes to infrastructure planning, transportation, and things of that nature, they have to be very aware of that and actually have to plan with that in mind, whether it be sensitive environmental issues or safety issues for transportation purposes that butt up against environmental issues. I think those frictions are greater in some parts of the country and less so in others.
Sure, that would make sense. I think the thing that is curious for a lot of us is under the umbrella of a state, you still get those variabilities. It's kind of like going to the local building, local building department, and depending on what person you're talking to, you get different interpretations and different answers.
Yes.
You know, at some point, either you want to take somebody outside and beat them up, or, you know, maybe reconsider your choice of career. I mean, it gets to that point, I know. It always seemed curious to me that a culture has been allowed to kind of go off on their own little tangents like that.
Yeah, and so it's the opposite of that, in my view, I've found is in some cases the Coastal Commission. They have a classic statewide mandate, okay, and that's their mantra. And it's viewed as being less responsive to local regional needs, okay? So it's inverted in that case, in my view, because, you know, you've got people in a region saying this is their priorities as a collective community in that region, yet the state Coastal Commission, by its mandate, and they'll tell you that, our obligation is to the state, and that's how they apply.
Well, I guess the feds, then, it's to Delaware.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you certainly can see pluses and minuses on both sides. I mean, the consistency, you got to tip your hat to that, because at least then you know what you're dealing with.
Correct.
Instead of the variability, but you certainly would like to be able to have somebody with some local decision-making power to be able to deal with, oh, there's a bump there, okay, we'll knock that down, we don't have to worry about that.
Right. I think it could be more flexible than it is, certainly, and be a little bit more responsive to the regional needs. But again, they do have a statewide mandate, and the biggest thing you hear is a precedent setting, okay? So, you know, they do something down in Southern California to be responsive to that, then they set precedents that are used in other parts of the state. So,
do larger states, California, Alaska, Texas, I think you guys have properties in each. Is it, because of the size, a different set of challenges than the smaller states that are probably more akin to four or five of our counties being put together, more homogenous in what their desires are?
I think I'm going to use diversity as a word. I think in California, I think you have a tremendous amount of diversity in priorities and views of the communities. I think in some larger states, even though they may be large, I think they're not as diverse and are of like kind and like mind in some of the issues. So it just depends on, you know, what you run into.
Whether it's Idaho or somewhere else.
I didn't say that.
I did. Well, I was thinking of Oregon, too, just the way that it's set out, a statewide land use versus jurisdictional.
True.
I mean, it's got to be a little bit more challenging.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Mike Casey. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Casey, CEO of Security National. Talk Shop presented by REDEC and by CDH Painting. Mike, as you look at some of the different industries, different businesses, different regions that you guys have got, do you see any general trends? We are in between, well, I guess tonight, in between the two conventions, and economics wasn't really focused on too much by the Republicans. We'll see what the Democrats talk about this week. What kind of trends, what kind of environment, what kind of sense do you have about the economy of the country at this point?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, you know, we work in mortgage servicing for Security National's mortgage servicing platform. We have an insurance company and we have the real estate company. So across those three businesses, I mean, my general sense is that the trends are certainly favorable. They're good. They're much better than they were, say, 2008 to about 2012. Those are some tough years. But we're getting the sense that, I mean, our borrowers are doing better under our mortgage servicing platform.
How do you know that?
Just because they're paying their
in arrears versus
exactly. The rate of delinquency, for example. Our real estate tenants and our office buildings and our retail projects are paying. Their sales are doing well. I mean, it's not knocking your socks off. It's not the hockey stick thing, but it's nice to just get.
See, back to Boise. You give me a hard time. Okay, buddy.
But the general trends are good, I have to say. You know, we were talking earlier about different approaches to things like development and different priorities. We had a project in Mississippi, one of our malls, that we wanted to convert some space into some mini storage, like refrigerated mini storage. And we had a meeting and we went to the permitting department, sat down and said, okay, well, we want to do this. It's about 50,000 square feet. How long will it take us to get to a permit stage, and the guy hesitates. Well, you know, right now we got one of our staff guys are on vacation, but you know, I'm sure we can get it done in about 3 weeks.
Acceptable.
Acceptable from benchmarking with California projects. And it's like there's just different approaches in different states. And
is it better, worse, or just different?
Well, from my perspective, it's better if you can do it quicker and more streamlined. I just think it gets, and again, in California, I'm sure that everybody feels that the regulations were put in place for all the right reasons and all the boxes need to be checked. But the end result of that is that projects, like today, talking about doing some zoning changes, it was 18 to 24 months of processing on a project as big as a balloon track.
Okay. Is it, which might be big for a little Eureka, but in the grand scheme of things, I would think would be a fairly minute project.
Yeah, it's a pretty basic project.
So it the difference in the time, is it studies? Is it public workshops, an opportunity for everybody to know everything about everybody? Is it just a general lack of urgency?
I think all of the above, frankly. I don't know if it's a general lack of urgency. I think it's a response to the structure, similar to what we talked about with Caltrans. I mean, they have a process, and that's the level of enthusiasm they'll bring to it. They'll bring up ideas to short-circuit things when they can, but the fact of the matter is the administrative process is lengthy, it's bureaucratic, and you do a lot of studies. There's a lot of environmental sensitivity with any development project. That comes as no surprise. A lot more so than you would find in other states and other jurisdictions, for sure.
So, I mean, just so we kind of have an idea, and Mississippi isn't often seen as in a positive light by a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. Just leave it there. What is the difference? I mean, if you've got, let's see, the cultural studies that have to happen here. Okay, do you have cultural studies or Indian studies, I guess, is for most people what we think of. Do those have to occur in Mississippi as well?
No. I mean, you go to Texas, you go to Mississippi, Louisiana, you'll have some element of those things, but the list is much shorter. The focus, frankly, is they're more focused on timing, getting a project to fruition, which from the jurisdiction standpoint means tax revenue, right? It means activity. It could mean turning blight into a development project, so they're motivated to do that. It's just that, and there's not a lot of controversy or special interest groups, per se, that you have to deal with, similar to what you deal with in California. I mean, I don't want to pick on California, but
it's the one we know.
Yeah, it's what I know.
It's a reference point for us. Yeah.
Right. And so I can tell you that as developing projects in California versus developing in, say, Nebraska, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, North Carolina, even a good example, not running into nearly the delays and lengthy time it takes to bring a project up.
So if the cultural studies is one element, what about the environmental stuff? Since we've got a kid in Nebraska, let's pick on Nebraska for a sec. I know you guys have got significant holdings in Omaha as well as in Lincoln. So let's use Lincoln to get away from the river.
Okay.
So what kind of environmental studies impact on the grass?
It's a basic, kind of phase one, phase two. Let's, it depends on the use history of the site. If you had a former, just a warehouse facility in the past that had benign products running through it, less of a concern, but they're going to say go do a standard grid of testing, and if they find any hot spots, they're going to ask you to take care of them, and probably do some groundwater. If groundwater is in the area, they'll ask you to check that. But it really
traffic studies and all that kind of normal stuff.
Level of service on traffic, the environmental issues with respect to, like you said, Indian culture. Those things you find more specific in my history with California. Bugs and bunnies, they call it, that kind of stuff. That's really more of a California thing that I've run into versus.
Really? So a lot of the guys don't have the critter stuff?
No.
Unless it's federally listed or something like that.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, you have sand flies in Riverside. You've got, you know, the orange beetle in Sacramento Yard. I mean,
don't forget about the Menzies wallflower, buddy. That one had all kinds of fun. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Mike Casey. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop with Mike Casey. Mike, some of the environmental stuff, I mean, you said hardly any. I guess maybe I need to get out of here more regularly because it seems so foreign. Yeah, and I suppose that's true with anything else. When you guys bring somebody from another locale and you bring them in or give them a project in California, how do they react?
Well, it's not like they're unaware. I mean, California has a reputation from a development perspective. They know.
But reality sometimes is a little bit more sobering
They're taken aback at times. Part of it they expect. I mean, they expect CEQA. They expect the long process on the environmental analysis. I mean, they just factor that into their costs and time. And frankly, a lot of them don't come here for that reason.
Oh, they just don't.
They don't.
Don't do business.
You know, I mean, particularly I think folks that are used to doing where our projects are in the South and sort of what I call tertiary markets, those developers don't play in California. They just won't.
It's a long commute.
True.
What about the resources that are used, either the acquisition of, the cost of, or the ability to use? Does that vary also?
Well, it varies. All of those vary, frankly. It's the biggest risk in development in California, and particularly why it takes so much equity versus financing. You've got to bring a lot of money to a project. You've got to probably pay at least 50% down on the acquisition of the land, and you probably better have millions of dollars to cover soft costs and time frame. Because the biggest risk you have is timing of market. If you think about it, you're there because of a current
today
opportunity.
Yeah, you see something today and you want to pounce.
Right.
Yeah.
And then so you spend two and a half years trying to take advantage of that opportunity, and then the market cycle changes on you. And that happens in California repeatedly.
I would think that's, you know, if you could get somebody on staff that had a real good crystal ball, they'd be worth their weight in gold. Just the timing.
Yeah.
You know, and something as simple as 2 months can probably have a huge impact on the viability of a development.
No question.
See, I get some of this stuff figured out. Oregon has got a statewide land use plan rather than locals. Is it easier to operate in one environment or another?
Well, I'm not familiar with the statewide approach, but I would suspect that if they're not responsive to, you know, some of the regional needs, that they would be having a lot of conflict, I would suspect. But
well, you got to be a smaller state, too.
Yeah, that's true, and a sparse population center. So it may be statewide, but in fact, it's probably only, you know, a few communities that are really impacted there.
Yeah, that's got to be part of the fun of the job, is finding some of that kind of stuff out and coming up with the better way to do it.
Definitely.
All right, well, let you get on your horse and gallop out of town, okay?
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming by.
You betcha.
See if you can get, you know, give them a little bit of aspirin. Help them out.
Well, I can do a little of that.
Yeah.
I'm in a precarious position.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, particularly if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
We've been talking shop this morning with Mike Casey. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you then.